Want access to search and listen to the entire webmasterradio.fm archive of over 1,500 podcasts commercial-free? Just become a webmasterradio.fm elite member for less than 99 cents a day. Otherwise, the last 60 days of content are on the house. Webmasterradio.fm, we're everywhere.
Hey, what are you reading?
Revenue Magazine. It keeps me up to date on everything in performance marketing.
Yeah? I get all my information online.
I don't see a computer next to your boogie board there.
Well, I've got a regular magazine here.
Revenue Magazine is the only hard copy magazine that covers affiliate marketing techniques, search technologies, online fraud prevention, and interactive advertising, branding, and marketing.
My magazine's got pictures.
Revenue Magazine has everything for online marketers, affiliates, merchants, agencies, and networks. And you can read previous issues, blogs, and more at RevenueToday.com.
Mine's got a centerfold.
Revenue Magazine. Magazine, the performance marketing standard. For more information, go to RevenueToday.com.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Welcome to the show, everybody. We're happy to have you on board today. Unfortunately, my co-host Amanda is without a voice. Her voice is gone. So it's me and only me and a fabulous guest that we set up today, Dr. Barry Sears. Welcome, Dr. Sears.
Well, thank you very much.
We're honored to have you on the show. You're a best-selling author of a book that everyone should read if they haven't, called The Zone. We all want to get in the zone, so we'd like to learn a little bit more about that book. But you also have a new book out called Toxic Fat, which is a nice pairing of words there, I might add, since we all want to get rid of both fat and anything toxic. Tell us about the new book and tell us a little bit about the story of your career.
Well, the new book is basically, it could be probably subtitled, If You're Fat, It's Not Your Fault. And that's basically what, you know, people have come to believe, that if people are overweight or even obese, basically they lack willpower. They're basically morally inferior. Just eat less, exercise more. But it turns out it's far more complex. What causes obesity and what maintains obesity is basically this toxic fat, not toxic fat that's on your body, but the toxic fat that's flowing through your bloodstream. And this type of fat is really causing inflammation. That's the underlying cause of obesity and all the conditions we associate with it, the diabetes, the heart disease, the cancer, the Alzheimer's.
So help me understand the overall concept of dieting in general, before we dive into the incredible problem of obesity and how obesity is really growing at an alarming pace. Talk with me about dieting. I mean, are you one to believe that you need an equal balance of cardiovascular activity, you know, with what you eat in your diet? Are you a believer in both of those two radical philosophies?
Well, I'll say yes and no. If your goal is weight loss, physical activity will probably have no impact on your weight loss. Well, that's basically contrary to what everyone says, except the experts. The experts say, I just came back from the National Obesity Meetings in Phoenix, and the world's expert in exercise will not help you lose weight one iota. Now, will exercise help you maintain your weight after you've lost it? Yes, it will. So, again, we have to look at weight loss and weight maintenance as two different things. Many people have lost hundreds of pounds, if not thousands. But that's easy. Keeping the weight off, that's the hard part. Now we come back to the definition of the word dieting. The word diet comes from the Greek root, which means way of life. Now, we've bastardized that to think of dieting as a short-term period of hunger and deprivation to try to get in a swimsuit. What you're trying to do is find a way of life, a diet, that can basically keep inflammation under control, and when you couple that with consistent, moderate exercise, you now have a proven way of basically maintaining weight maintenance, but the key thing is maintaining wellness, and that's the whole key. And a part of this, our whole aspect of this obesity epidemic, we've lost sight that many obese people are actually quite healthy, and many lean people are not that healthy at all. So sometimes looks can be very deceiving.
Mm. All right, so stay with me on this concept. I need to challenge you on this. That's my nature. So I want you to tell me why people that are on their feet all day, carpenters, construction workers, people that are constantly moving, their flow is their the blood is moving throughout their body. Why, in general, are they do they seem to have less problems with weight than people that are sitting at their desk and not getting any exercise throughout the day, including walking or moving around, and are strapped to a chair typically 6 to 8 hours a day? Isn't there something to that? You know, I know you're telling me that, okay, maybe the one-hour exercise thing may or may not have an impact. The one, you know, the 20-minute cardiovascular workout. I could maybe live with that as a concept, but although I'm going to still challenge you on that as well. But don't you think that blood flow and movement and activity is an important part of the overall health and well-being?
Oh, no question. That was not the question that's being asked.
Now, okay.
I agree with you. There are many great things to exercise, and that is, one, it'll help you live longer. You reduce the likelihood of diabetes and heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you'll improve your cardiovascular endurance and your strength to help you basically, you know, manage your life more effectively as you age. Three, you feel real good about yourself. And four, you hang around people who basically are also feeling good about themselves. They're nice people. These are all the great benefits of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at exercise to help you lose weight, that's not going to be one of the benefits of all the other great things that exercise do to improve our quality of life.
Got it. Okay. So I can still exercise and move around.
Oh, you have to. If you don't exercise,
myself.
your quality of life will not nearly be as good as it could be.
Okay. Let's talk about dieting now. Dive us into some of the core principles behind toxic fat and really what you're trying to get people to understand about themselves and their body and how it relates to diet.
Well, as the core aspect of toxic fat and diet behind it is basically keeping your hormones in a zone that's not too high but not too low. One of those hormones is called the hormone called insulin. Now, why is that important? About 75% of the population is genetically predisposed to gain weight. That doesn't say they will, but they just have the genetic predisposition. They have what I call a fat trap, a genetic fat trap, that can be activated by high levels of insulin. And for those individuals who are basically consuming a diet rich in refined carbohydrates, what they'll do, the calories get into the mouth, no question about that, but they get trapped in the adipose tissue. And as a consequence, they can't be released to make the chemical energy that requires the body requires to move around and survive. And so you ask a lot of overweight people, they'll tell you they're constantly hungry. They say, well, you got to be a liar because, look, you're fat. How can you be hungry if you're that fat? Because they are constantly hungry, and if they don't consume more calories, and hopefully some of the calories, you know, slop over into making chemical energy, they'll basically have to grind to a halt. So that those people who are genetically predisposed, they're caught between a rock and a hard place, that their genes are now out of sync with basically our current diet. And our current diet really started to change in the mid-70s when basically there was a push, what I call this perfect nutritional storm, to increase the production of refined carbohydrates and vegetable oils. Now, neither one by themselves is that dangerous. But when you combine them together, because the vegetable oils are rich in omega-6 fatty acids, you combine them together, you now cause inflammation mediated by one fatty acid. Basically, it's called arachidonic acid, but for the sake of the audience, we'll just call it toxic fat. And now when you have toxic fat, basically that's the underlying cause of the development of chronic disease. And if that toxic fat is high in the bloodstream, it's also high in your brain. And why is that important? Because now people who have high levels of toxic fat basically constantly hungry due to another increase in a hormone that causes basically a virtually uncontrolled appetite. So that now let's go back to the analogy of the person who's constantly moving around. It's not that they're moving around that keeps them thin, it's that they're not snacking as much. If you're sitting at a desk and you're constantly hungry, you can snack, you know, 8 hours a day very easily.
Let's make an assumption that I have a problem, and you've pegged me, you've diagnosed me. That's me, which it might be, by the way. But we'll stay hypothetical just in case. And, you know, I'm just hungry all the time. I have a weight problem. I'm killing myself to try to exercise 3 times a week. It's painful for me, but I do it anyway. So what do I do about all of this?
Well, you have to find out, again, I go back to my opening statement. If you're fat, it's not your fault. So first of all, don't beat up on yourself. The second thing, say, what's the cause of this weight gain? It says, basically, my hormones are out of sync. So what I have to do is basically now realign my hormones. And how do I do that? Basically, two things you can do. And because I have to realign them to reduce the inflammation that's driving this fat accumulation. One, I have to balance my plate. How do I do that? Well, it's pretty easy. If you have one hand and one eye, you divide your plate into 3 equal sections. On 1/3 of the plate, on each meal, you put some low-fat protein that's no bigger or thicker than the palm of your hand. The other 2/3 of the plate, you fill it full of carbohydrates which are rich in color. What are those? Fruits and vegetables. And you really basically go real easy on the grains and starches. And finally, you add some monounsaturated fat. This is the heart-healthy monounsaturated fat, like olive oil, slivered almonds, or guacamole. What you've created now is a drug that will keep those hormones in the zone that is the only known drug in the medical science that can reduce the levels of toxic fat. Now, if that's too hard to do, then you have one last thing you can do, and that is to try to dilute out the levels of toxic fat in the blood. And how do you do that? By taking lots of fish oil. And so basically, if you're genetically predisposed, you have basically dietary tools at your discretion, if you choose to use them, that can keep those genes from expressing themselves. If you don't, basically you're going to see what's happening across America, that you get an explosion of obesity and all the diseases that come with it.
Do you really feel confident that such a balanced formula could literally end the problems of obesity and, you know, start causing immediate weight loss and get people on track just through dietary changes alone?
Exactly. That's why you do clinical trials, to ask that question. And in every published clinical trial where you've treated humans like lab rats, basically you control all the food they eat, when they eat that type of balance, what do you find? They lower their levels of insulin more effectively. They basically have less appetite. Their blood sugar is lowered. Their blood lipids are lowered. Their fat loss is greater. And basically, they have far less inflammation. That last study coming from Harvard Medical School, how much less inflammation? About 9 times less. And this is why the newest dietary recommendations from the Joslin Research Center at Harvard Medical School for treating obesity and type 2 diabetes are basically exactly those I gave you. Now, how does a person put this in action? Well, I said if you had one hand and one eye, you can probably do it. But think 1, 2, 3. For every 1 gram of fat I consume, I want to consume 2 grams of protein and 3 grams of carbohydrate. Well, you can see there, it's not a high-fat diet. It's not a low-fat diet. It's not a high-carbohydrate diet. It's a balanced diet, because that's how our genes have evolved over the last 100 million years with the foods we've been consuming. It's only the last 30 years that we have basically caused such a change in our diet that our genes can no longer basically interact with that new dietary environment.
This is really good information. Let's take a break in a second. And when we come back, I'd like you to talk me through some sample diets of actual things that you think can work for a diet, so our listeners and myself, on behalf of my wife and Amanda, who's probably listening in as well, we can actually be left with some concrete things to try out and see if we can stick to a nice formula. We'll be back in just 1 minute, everybody. Back with Dr. Barry Sears in just a couple minutes.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Can you believe how long it takes to order food here? Here we go. Excuse me.
She's not even looking over here.
Great service is hard to come by, whether you're sitting at a bar, restaurant, or creating effective search advertising campaigns.
Excuse me. I think we need to go somewhere else.
It's easy to feel forgotten, especially when your advertising budget is on the line. LookSmart serves up to 400 million queries a day with a side of the best customer service in the online advertising industry.
Hi, how are y'all doing today? What can I get you folks to eat?
You were right. This place is so much better.
LookSmart, premium and performance advertising solutions.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan from the Daily Searchcast. You know, we love bringing you the news every day, and that's made possible by the sponsorship of BruceClay.com. They've just made Inc. Magazine's list of the fastest growing private businesses. They've exhibited and sponsored at my conferences from the very beginning. Bruce has got that long-standing search engine relationship chart, had been out there with the code of ethics, been a search engine expert in the field for ages. But did you know that Bruce Clay can do more than help you with just SEO? They can do PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding. Everything you need for success in the online marketplace, you can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years, offices worldwide, they've got answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Bruce Clay Incorporated.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Dr. Barry Sears. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We've got a question came in from the producer of WebmasterRadio.fm, and I wanted to ask it to see what thoughts you had. The question was about myths by other professionals and even other diets that you might want to comment on, and even myths in the industry, you know, serving food in smaller plates. Are there myths that just drive you crazy that are really untrue and are leading people in the wrong direction?
Well, I think that probably the biggest myth is basically all we have to do to solve our obesity crisis is to eat less and exercise more. And that turns out to be a very large myth, and basically it's ingrained because people want to believe calories in equals calories out, and it's a lot more complex than that. Let me give you an example of mice that can be made genetically obese. The little mice look like basketballs after a little while. Well, you can make them eat less and exercise more, and they will lose weight. But then when you do an autopsy, what do you find? They're still very, very fat, and most of the weight loss has come from basically cannibalization of their muscles and their organs. And you wonder why people basically say diets fail, because unless you overcome that hormonally induced fat trap, eating less and exercise more will cause you to basically cannibalize your own tissue, which, unless you're Karen Carpenter, this makes no sense. So we have a lot, and that's why people are always looking for magic bullets or basically boogeymen who are the cause of the problem. Is either too much fat, that'd be the low, say we saw that by eating low-fat diets, or too much carbohydrate, eat the Atkins diet. Well, it turns out our bodies are built upon basically balance and homeostasis. You need a balance, but you have to eat smaller meals, and that can only be done if you're simply not hungry between meals, and that's not a matter of willpower. That's a matter of hormonal control in the brain, which can be undone by high levels of toxic fat in the brain.
Tell me, what's your take on, say, some of the diet, full-blown plans like Jenny Craig, where you actually buy food and plates and microwave the food? What's your take on that type of a diet?
Well, it's probably one that, Bobby, is not sustainable, because the Jenny Craig diet is based on basically controlling portions, but because it's portions rich in carbohydrates. So even though you're reducing the portions, basically you're still now not affecting that fat trap, so you're always hungry. Ask anybody who's on Weight Watchers, who are counting Weight Watchers points. They're always hungry, and the response is, get used to it. Well, no one wants to be hungry, especially if you're surrounded by carbohydrates or food in general. So I think that you have to basically find a system, and here's how you do it. Eat a meal, and then look at your watch 4 to 6 hours later. If you're not hungry after that meal, whatever you ate at that meal was hormonally correct for your body. Now, if you're hungry for 4 or 6 hours, basically it's the wrong meal. Let's use an example. I eat a big bowl of pasta at 12 o'clock. What happens by 2 o'clock? You're falling asleep. Was that meal hormonally correct for you? No. So you keep adjusting it, adjusting protein, carbohydrate, and fat until you find the right balance to say, each time I eat a meal, I'm simply not hungry for the next 4 to 6 hours, and I'm maintaining peak mental acuity because I'm stabilizing blood sugar levels. So this is a very easy way to fine-tune your diet, but basically if you do that, you're going to find it's going to end up pretty close to being 1, 2, 3.
The, you know, before we get to the menu questions I have, which I'm very excited to get to, I just want to focus on this portion concept, because you had originally described to us, you know, one-third, you know, about the size of my hand, you know, low-carb, low-fat protein, you know, two-thirds, you know, carb. You were describing to me a very proportional, a very, you know, mechanical process of eat a certain amount of this all the time at certain portions. Doesn't that conflict with what you just said about the Jenny Craig, though, which is a very proportion-centric sort of model?
Well, no,
can I adjust my eating based upon how hungry I am, or how does your model work?
The Jenny Craig model is one that basically eating lots of carbohydrates. And so that's going to raise the hormone insulin, and that's going to make you hungry all the time.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So if you're basically, now if you can eat that 1, 2, 3 balance, one, you won't eat as much because you'll now cause new hormonal signals to go to the brain to say stop eating, and basically you're not hungry between meals. If you're not hungry, cutting back in calories is pretty simple. If you're always hungry, it's tough.
Yeah. What's your take on drinking, you know, 3 to 5 quarts of water a day to try to quench your... Does that clear out the trapped hormonal problems inside of you?
No, but it's not a bad strategy. A good rule of thumb is how much water you need. Take your weight and divide it by 2 and try to drink that number of ounces of water per day. Now, why is that important? Your cells are about 65% water. And if they're hydrated, then they work more efficiently to convert dietary, you know, calories into chemical energy that makes the body run. If they're not hydrated, they won't be very efficient, so you'll have to eat more calories to be able to make the chemical energy you need to survive. So it's a very, very simple way. It's not about filling up the stomach. It's just keeping the cells hydrated enough so they can function most effectively.
What's your take on the amount of energy required to digest food and how that figures in your diet? And I'll give you an example of that just so we can chime in. So if I'm eating, say, a brisket that was cooked for 12 hours and is incredibly soft, you know, versus some undercooked lamb, which is very hard and choppy, there's less energy required in my body to process the brisket, right? And isn't
Not
that a good thing with regards to dieting?
The brisket would be easier to digest, and of course it's going to taste a lot better than the undercooked lamb, so you probably won't be eating too much of that in the first place. But a lot of the energy is to really basically, to not only to break down what we see as protein into individual amino acids, but then to reassemble them and convert them into chemical energy. And that turns out about 10% of the calories you consume on a daily basis is using that breaking down of materials in the gut so they can be absorbed and then basically reassembled for use in the body. So that, if food doesn't taste good, nobody's going to eat it. So you have to say, this is why, that's why Americans have lost the skill to cook, because that makes any type of food taste better. Unfortunately, as that skill has eroded, we're basically now eating more processed foods because we've lost the ability to take regular foods and make them taste better. And that's why we have processed foods. And in the process, obviously processed foods are processed.
No pun intended.
But they're broken down. So now the carbohydrates enter the bloodstream at a much faster rate, and that causes the increase of insulin. This is why I like to have people eat lots of vegetables. Remember your grandmother said, you can't leave the table until you eat all your vegetables. She didn't say you can't leave the table until you eat all your rolls or all your mashed potatoes. It was your vegetables. Why? Because they enter the bloodstream more slowly than does of a potato. In fact, a potato enters the bloodstream as sugar faster than table sugar. And so basically a lot of things that we thought were true turn out to be not so true when you do the scientific studies.
Speed of the bloodstream. Now let's talk about sugar and hydration for a minute. I know quite a few people that clearly have, you know, problems with obesity, and they will drink, you know, 5, 10, 15 Diet Cokes a day. They'll just drink soda and Coke throughout the day. I mean, what's wrong with that? What are they doing to their bodies?
Well, they think they're doing a smart job. I'm drinking, you know, Diet Coke. That's better than taking Coke Classic, which is true, except the artificial sweetener is interacting with receptors in your tongue and is sending signals down to the pancreas, hey, the guy's drinking sugar, release the insulin. And so what happens, insulin's released in the bloodstream, even though there's no sugar behind it, and it drives down blood sugar levels, so you tend to overeat at the next meal. So what they're thinking correctly, but basically the execution leaves a lot to be desired, and that's why studies have shown conclusively the more diet drinks you consume, the more weight you gain. It's not that diet drinks cause weight gain, but what diet drinks do is cause basically hormonal false signals that basically make you more hungry at the next and at the succeeding meals.
Fascinating. Let's take another extreme. Healthy woman, you know, works out, minimally goes on walks an hour or two a day, you know, tries to, you know, eat 3 square meals a day, but just is depressed and complains, I can't lose weight. I can't seem to do anything to lose weight. What's wrong with that picture? Because I think that fits perfectly with your whole new book.
Well, remember we said that exercise by itself will not cause weight loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she's, you know, working real hard, but basically her diet is basically undermining it. Now she's thinking she's eating a good diet. But if that diet is rich in, let's say, vegetable oils, which are ubiquitous in America, and rich in more refined carbohydrates, not just junk foods, but things like bread, pasta, and that's even whole wheat bread, then basically what she's doing is basically building up levels of toxic fat, and that's keeping her fat in spite of her exercise. And more importantly, basically if she's fat and she's inflamed, basically she's going to live a shorter life. And this is why that, you know, one of the more interesting data has come out from the Centers for Disease Control is saying overweight people actually live longer than normal weight people. They say, well, how could this be? Well, it turns that overweight people, oftentimes, if they're not inflamed, basically will live longer than somebody who's normal weight and is inflamed. And how can you tell? Well, you can't. Not the classic inflammation that hurts, but this is what I call silent inflammation, again, mediated by this toxic fat. You can't feel it. It's below the perception of pain, but it basically drives the more rapid development of chronic disease. Now, you can basically measure this by a blood test, as you can measure cholesterol, but in my book, I give some subjective indicators that basically if you answer yes to more than 3 of those questions, you probably have high levels of silent inflammation, and this is a book you have to read to basically reverse the levels of toxic fat already in your bloodstream.
I want your take on the actual concept of fat itself as related to surgical procedures, liposuction, you know, surgical procedures, shrinking of the stomach, some dangerous surgical procedures. What's your take on, you know, with so much pressure, particularly on, you know, to anyone, on women or anybody in today's society? I mean, they want to they view their fat as like, this is on me, I want it off me. You know, the problem is get it off me, right? What do I have to do? How can I alter myself? What's your take on liposuction?
Well, in many ways, they should view that fat maybe as a potential survival mechanism. It can be a great toxic waste dump to take a lot of toxins, including toxic fat, and keep it out of the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. Now, to take it off, it's saying, why have they resorted to that? Because their diet hasn't worked. I say, first of all, basically reanalyze the diet and basically see, are you basically creating the inflammation that's causing the fat? Now, in terms of, let's say, take the most extreme case, gastric bypass surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, this is the number one treatment for diabetes. It's a miracle drug. It's a pathetic statement. It's just the best we can offer our diabetic patients in America is gastric bypass surgery, the first time you've cut out normal tissue in the history of man. But why would it work? It turns out once you basically do that surgery, you change the levels in the gut almost instantaneously. And what happens, as soon as a patient wakes up out of the surgery, for the first time, they are not hungry their entire life. No willpower. They have not lost any weight, but they have no hunger. because the surgery has altered basically hormonal outputs in the gut that go right to the brain saying, stop eating.
Let's focus in on that for 1 second. This opportunity to alter the desire to eat, right? We talked about diet as a way to alter that crave. Are there other ways that are out there to alter that?
Oh, of course.
Distractions or
habits? Well, no,
actually they're
called drugs.
Yeah.
You know, the two most successful weight loss drugs in the history of America were amphetamines and fenfen. Now, both were kind of dangerous, but what they did, they stopped hunger. Now, probably one of the best ways to basically stop hunger or basically not have it overwhelm you is